Welcome to Lessons from Losing, a new series from Awin where we speak to founders about the slip-ups, setbacks, and struggles behind their success. Today, I'm joined by Hannah Warrior, co-founder of AffiliFest, the conference that's quickly become one of the affiliate industry's most talked about and unique annual events. Creating a new event is never easy, but creating one that people remember, talk about, and want to come back to year after year is a hell of a lot harder. It takes a clear vision, relentless determination, and a confidence to do things differently. From taking a bold idea and turning it into one of the industry's fastest growing events, this is Hannah's story. This is Lessons from Losing with Hannah Warrior.
Those people that you think have all the answers to everything, they actually don't. You look at like people on board or like senior people, and actually they're like as vulnerable as you, and they make mistakes and they don't know everything. And so like, don't be intimidated by those people because no one has all the answers at all. Yeah. And actually vulnerability is the best quality to have as a leader. I'm the CEO and co-founder of AffiliFest. It's still quite weird for me to say that I'm a co-founder because it's literally been 2 years. So we're like babies, probably compared to the other people that you're that have been on the podcast. So what does that actually mean? So I'm kind of involved in everything. So one minute I might be pitching sponsors, and the next I'm checking venue layouts, the next I'm fundraising, the next I'm hiring. So I do a bit of everything, and that's changing as we grow the team more and more. And before that, I was at a company called Clarion Events for 12 years. So I was very much part of the kind of big corporate life. So it's very different now. And I was running the digital marketing division. Which everyone listening, I'm sure, will know, Affiliate Summit. So I was running Affiliate Summit as part of my division. So it's been like a huge change since I've done that.
And like, what was that transition like, going from more of a corporate environment into one where you are, you know, effectively starting from scratch?
Yeah, like, totally underestimated how difficult that would be, to be honest. So I resigned, and I knew I wanted to do something myself. I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I love the affiliate industry. So I actually like did loads of research in other sectors, but landed on affiliate, and I'm really good, was really good friends with James. And so it all kind of worked, us meeting and wanting to do this together. But yeah, it was hugely difficult, not in terms of like, I think what you would expect. And this is like been my biggest thing. My biggest failure is the underestimation really of that, of how difficult that would be. Because I think you think that it's going to be this big financial risk, which it obviously is, and that's going to be the most difficult thing. But actually, it wasn't that at all. It was like the kind of emotional change, I guess, and the emotional toll of moving into becoming a founder and like everything that meant. And I think, so you're at a corporate and you've got, you know, a big job title, you know, as a managing director of a division. I was on a board for Europe. I had a big salary, and you kind of get that all removed in like one foul swoop, and then you have nothing and you're starting from scratch. And I literally was at home with an idea and a baby and just building it from absolutely nothing, with no, not even a pound of revenue. And I was running like a 50 million pound business in Clarion. So, and it was just crazy, because that then like really messes with your like self-worth. Because I think as someone who's like, your career is really important to you, to all of a sudden just have like nothing and then go into something that's like totally starting from scratch is really quite difficult emotionally.
So in terms of AffiliFest itself, what prompted you? Obviously, you said you left Clarion. It wasn't like you necessarily had the idea at that point.
No, I didn't at all. I left Clarion. I was bored. I was a bit comfy. I was a bit comfortable. I'd had a baby. Wasn't excited to go back. And I just wanted a new challenge. I'm like very motivated by challenges. And I just really believe that you have to grow by getting out of your comfort zone. So I was like, right, I'm sure I'll leave Clarion, and I want to look into doing something myself. And actually, when I resigned the CEO of Clarion said, you need to like do something yourself. Like you've definitely got that like entrepreneur real drive. And I was a bit like, okay, I don't know if I could do that. That sounds really scary. But, and I look at other founders and with so much admiration, I thought it was like the coolest job. And it's almost like surreal.
Yeah.
Like even to sit here and to be invited to be on a podcast with founders is like pinch myself.
Yeah.
So exciting. Like what an honor. And then, yeah. So we've got like 12 people who got our logo. I got it yesterday.
That is a permanent tattoo, right?
Yes, permanent. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And we do give people free tickets to, for life, yeah. But we're going to have to stop it because I'm running a business here, everybody. But yeah, right now we definitely still do that. It's just, yeah, amazing. Yeah. It's not really an events business, it's a community that we're building, and that's where it kind of starts. And I think, yeah, the people getting the tattoos and the merch is like, people are offering to pay for our merch. Really, we've had a company offer to stock our merch.
Really?
A retailer. I think just kind of going back to what I said earlier, it was less like a business failure, but more just like the total underestimation of how much that transition to founder would mess me up emotionally. Like I was really excited when I resigned, and the next day I was just like, this is the biggest mistake I've ever made. I've walked away from a massive salary and I've had a baby and I now like have like nothing. And at the same time, like, yeah, when you've had a baby anyway, it's really hard because you've lost a lot of your identity to become a mum. And I think, yeah, so my biggest lesson was just I underestimated that whole thing. And I look back now and I'm so glad everything happened how it happened. But at the time I had like huge regrets and I didn't realize at all how much it would really, really affect me.
Yeah.
And I think that's just something that you don't realize. Everyone's like, I bet you get people in this podcast saying the thing that you need to do is just go for it. You know, start before you're ready. Definitely true. But it's also like that giving up your identity when you've worked so hard to build it. When I was there for like 12 years and I had a big team, I had other people making decisions to go to, you're making every decision.
Yeah.
Everything is down to you. Like, paying people's salaries, I like physically have to press the transfer button. Like, that's like crazy. And like, if you don't have enough cash, like I remember the period between like last year's Affiliate Fest and Affiliate Fest North, oh, I was so panicked about cash flow. And like, not paying myself a salary, that's the first thing that you like stop because you want to pay your staff.
Yeah.
So that's the mental load of that is unbelievable. It's like you're not sleeping when you're worried about like someone else paying their mortgage, let alone your own. And I'm really lucky I've got a partner who has been so supportive in this whole transition. And it's so funny because I think he is such someone who would have loved to have started his own business. And now it's like, that's going to be hard because he's kind of made that sacrifice so that he can watch me do this.
Yeah.
And it's just a dream come true now.
I wanted to go back to that moment, I guess, when you had handed in your resignation at Clarion and you're suddenly confronted by the prospect of not having that status or not having that security. And was there a moment at which you were, or what moment, what was the moment at which you were kind of like, was it immediate? You were like, oh my God, like I cannot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really deal with this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm quite a rash, like decision person. So, which is probably like every time I've resigned from a job, I've like, it's been like an emotional reaction to something.
Yeah,
and then I've
been
like, what the fuck have I done? So yeah, it was kind of like, oh, this is exciting. But then it's like, where do I start? Like, I want to do something myself. There was a job that I wanted. I went through an interview process for a like M&A consultancy and I got really far and I didn't get the job. Oh my God, I was devastated.
Yeah.
Totally devastated. And I'm like, thank God I didn't get that job. But I hadn't really faced rejection like that for a long time. And it's literally like when you get dumped.
Yeah.
And they didn't get back to me after I put my baby in nursery. I paid for a day of nursery to prepare for this presentation with you. And they didn't get back to me for 10 days after I'd done these two presentations in an interview. Which, if they ever listen to this, that is a really awful interview process to then not reply. I'm so glad I didn't, because this is not a world I can see myself like being in.
Yeah.
It's like very pale, male and stale. And that's definitely a total antithesis.
I feel much better suited to where you are now.
Definitely. Yeah. And if that hadn't happened, I would never have started a Philly Fest.
Yeah.
But then I like started researching lots of different event ideas. Like, I'd really love this. I think there's a real gap in the events market in terms of like neurodiversity. And that's something I'm really interested in, because I've got two stepchildren and my partner who are neurodiverse. I just got pulled back into affiliate.
Yeah.
James Little.
Yes. Talk me through that process as well. Yeah. Like collaborating with James, connecting with him, formulating the idea for a Philly Fest, and what the kind of brand identity, I guess, was of the festival that you were, or event that you were envisaging.
Yeah, really good question. And I love talking about this. So we said we feel like the affiliate industry deserves better than what's going on at the moment, because we think we wanted to create an event that was fun, that we would love to go to. Mm. And as part of that, then we went for lunch, and he was kind of unhappy with where Huddle at the time was going. Mm. And I had nothing to do with Huddle. And so we talked about what would be important to us. And I look back now, and actually that was us kind of talking about our values. Mm. And that's actually like the most important thing when you're launching a business, or you're with someone, or you're going to work for someone, because if your values aren't aligned, you're going to be miserable. Mm. So we talked about, we want it to be fun. We want it to be free for brands. We want brands to be at the center of everything we're doing. We want it to be memorable. We want it to be something that like people talk about all year. And we were like really agreeing on all this. And I was like, okay, let's just like do it.
I wanted to ask you about like the nature of your business is pretty unique from all the other guests that we've had, which are all, you know, online digital properties largely. Yours is very much a kind of physical business. Mm. Like you're turning up on the day at an actual venue, having to figure out logistics. There must have been so much jeopardy involved in that, and so many kind of like things that have gone awry, and you've had to kind of correct on the day and put on a good front. Got any sort of insider
perspectives on that? I mean, this week's been a nightmare because of the weather.
The weather's been bad.
Like, and there's a direct correlation often when you've got free tickets between good weather and people turning up.
Oh, really?
That's like a proper like piece of actual causation, like data.
Yeah.
So and then we had tube strikes this week as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a pretty toxic combination. Oh my God. Yeah.
So, but do you know what? It you just have to be so agile and reactive constantly. We've literally just changed plan for that. There's a speed networking session for brands going on over there right now, and it was supposed to be outside, started raining, so we changed the plans to being undercover. So there's loads of stuff like that with events.
Yeah.
I think big kind of mistakes. I mean, we used to actually, that's actually why I love the idea of this podcast, because I believe celebrating mistakes is so important. So in my old team at Affiliate Summit, we would actually have like an award, like mistake of the show.
Okay, yeah.
So you have to learn from it and don't do it again.
Yeah.
Actually, let's not like hide from mistakes. Everyone makes it. And if you don't have that culture, I feel like people don't take risks or they're like scared to tell you when they've fucked up.
Yeah.
So we had to think of a mistake of show, my favorite mistake ever. So we had Snoop talking at our show, right? It was a show that I used to run called Trapping and Convergence, right? And we got Snoop Dogg and Martha Stewart, right?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, really.
Did they always come as a package, those things?
You can pay for them as a package, and it's like a better deal than if you pay for them individually, so we got Snoop and Martha Stewart, and we got Snoop, and we'd like sold meet and greets for Snoop, and they were like 5K a pop.
Yeah.
It's like, there's a lot of revenue tied to Snoop. And then he cancelled like the day before because he had COVID.
Oh God.
Yeah. And
So Martha was still there.
Martha came. Yeah. Martha came. And I accidentally told her that Snoop had got COVID in the green room, and she was like, "Snoop's got COVID." And I was like, "Fuck, I shouldn't have told her." She's like calling him. But no, then my marketing team, she emailed everyone, all the attendees, with this like really funny gif of like Snoop saying, "Sorry guys, I've got COVID," or something like. And Snoop's team got it, and they went mad. Oh, so they called, like,
I guess this is now like a news item, right?
Yeah. And they were like, "Sorry, in the contract, you're not supposed to have told anyone like this."
Yeah.
So that's probably like, this was like 6,000 people who got that email.
Yeah.
Like all the attendees got this, and it was a hilarious like gif of Snoop saying he got COVID, and that won the mistake of the show, obviously.
Because we
had to like do some real like groveling and
damage limitation.
Luckily one of the founders of that show, who was kind of still working with us on an earnout, he was a lawyer like by trade.
Okay.
So he had to like literally get his lawyer hat on and argue us out of paying like hundreds of thousands in damages.
Yeah.
So that was a big one that I always remember and love. The marketing game are going to kill me for saying that.
Going back to a Philly Fest, I know it's like it's a young company. It's only been around for a couple of years. But has there ever been a point? I mean, you talked earlier a bit about like, you know, doing payroll, trying to make sure that payroll it goes ahead as planned. Like, has there ever been a point so far where you've thought like, do you know what, this might not work out?
If I'm honest, like, I still don't feel confident. Like, I know that sounds mental. We've got like a hugely successful show that's been amazing the last 2 days, but like, I don't know if I'll ever stop worrying about that. And I don't know if that's just like an entrepreneur thing, but I'm never going to feel like this is like, I'm now like, often are we growing too fast? Like, or are we not growing fast enough? Like, there's just, everyone's had a good show, but did they just have fun? Like, I'm like, but did you get any business? Like, so this, I don't know if I'll ever stop worrying. And I think that's like part of being an entrepreneur, is you just have to get comfortable with being uncomfortable. And that kind of sick feeling about payroll, I can't imagine that's ever going to go.
Yeah.
And that's for everything. Like, it's so important to me that our customer feedback, and that's been at the core of a Philly Fest, like, and the core of like my whole career, is like, I'm really obsessed with our customers, and the survey that goes out post show is so important to dictate the next year's show. And we do like NPS and customer satisfaction, and lots of analysis on like what that's correlated to. So for example, we know that if you download the app, you're more likely to have a good time.
Yeah.
So there's like a correlation, like loads of interesting stuff like that.
Yeah.
That survey goes out after the show. I have to bloody send it, obviously. I don't have a team anymore to do that. So that will go out on Friday. Oh, my heart is in my mouth when I'm looking at like the NPS.
Yeah.
Like, it just can destroy me. Also, and so Adam, your CEO, he would often like make my like emotional state at an affiliate summit.
Okay. his feedback. Right, okay.
I was like, he's going to give me my feedback now.
Yeah.
And he's like, he can be like pretty cutting if he's not happy.
Yeah, yeah.
And then also like very nice if he is happy. Yeah. Yeah. And luckily with Philly Fest, he's been like super kind and supportive so far. Yeah. But affiliate summit maybe sometimes wasn't like that.
You got to stick him up on stage at least with a heart monitor this time around.
That was revenge.
Yeah. It can be quite lonely as a founder.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you've got a lot of responsibility, a lot of that burden is on your shoulders. Obviously, you've got your co-founder, James, to kind of like work through things. But are there moments where you felt like you are on your own a bit, and it's, you know, what do you do in those moments? Like, are there people you can reach out to that are maybe in the business, outside the business, in the industry, family, friends?
Yeah, I think having a co-founder, and interesting what you said earlier about all those co-founders that you've been speaking to. I couldn't have done this alone.
No.
I'm just not someone who likes working alone. Like, I've always had a kind of like partner in crime wherever I've worked. And that was, I would never have done this without James at all. And so, if I'm feeling lonely, like we had a moment yesterday where I like was like welling up about, it's like, oh my God, the buskers haven't arrived, which sounds like a terrible thing. It sounds like a small thing. I was so annoyed because... Yeah. in my head, I've got this like entrance where
yes.
the buskers are playing and yeah. everyone's turning up. And that's like the end and the start of an event are actually like very important for people's like psychological like yeah. view of the yeah. event. And the bloody busker was like 2.5 hours late yeah. and I went and cried to James. Yeah. He's like, I think he was looking at me like, it's fine. Everyone's fine. I'm like, yeah, but the buskers. Yeah, so James is like a massive support. I hope he would say the same about me. And my partner is.
Yeah.
Actually, do you know, it's nice talking to other founders in the industry. Kev Edwards, mm-hmm. like, it's been nice because we've kind of been on a similar stage of a journey. Because
yeah.
I don't know when the APMA, but that's also what makes it amazing
yeah.
because you get that like feeling of an end point of
yeah.
this was an amazing win. So it's like, I guess like high risk, high reward
yeah.
because there's nothing better than like when you're at the end of an event, which after this I will be celebrating
yes.
on the roller disco. There's nothing better than that feeling of finishing an event when it's been amazing.
Yeah.
Oh my God, the worst is when it hasn't.
Yeah.
And people are unhappy. But genuinely, I was just talking to our head of sales, Lydia, and she's like, I've had zero complaints. I was like, has this ever happened?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's this like euphoric,
yeah,
that
yeah,
feeling.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's funny. I say it's like, imagine getting a team. You're basically like building a little village, like a village. At some events, you're building like bigger than a population of a country.
Yeah.
Like not even joking. Yeah, like, yeah. The event my partner runs is like 100,000 visitors.
Oh wow!
So yeah. like, imagine how big that yeah. is. And then you're hiring people who started the day before to tell people where to go.
Yeah.
It's like
yeah.
you like, and then they, but by the time they learn the directions,
yeah.
it's done.
The event's over.
Yeah.
yeah, yeah.
It's really tough,
yeah.
Which is why I rope in my entire friends and family because
yeah.
I can trust them and I've got loads of friends from the events world who yeah. are like the best at what they do.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
that's super helpful.
Yeah, yeah, nice. What would you say that like going through some of these experiences where things haven't quite worked out, are there any sort of core principles or lessons that you've learned that you take into the running of your business today?
Yeah. Yes, definitely. If I can use like a real failure from or a big mistake from when I was running Affiliate Summit.
Mm-hmm.
So we launched Affiliate Summit in Europe. Did you go?
Yes, Amsterdam.
Sorry.
I had a good time.
So... yeah, our sponsors didn't. we basically took an amazing brand from the US and just ran it exactly the same.
Yeah,
we didn't like, we just kind of assumed it would work exactly the same in the UK. And we launched it in the UK in 2018 and then we took it down to summer in 2019.
So, yeah.
And it's just, it was so stupid because it was a total failure. Actually, not really financially. It didn't lose money, but like the customer feedback was like atrocious. It was like the worst. It was like -40.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which is horrendous. Yeah. And actually, my team were like, before they told me the NPS, they were like desperately trying to like email select people with the link of the survey, and it just made it worse. But the lesson was, you've got to speak to your customers and understand what they want. Mm. And that has dictated my entire career since.
Mm.
You can't just assume you've got a great brand that it will work wherever you do it, because you need to put your core customer at the center of everything you do.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm going to all these events in the US at the moment and talking to brands are at like the absolute center of everything that we do. They're our core customer, because you get the brands there, everybody else will follow. So that's why I'm going to Think Tank in the US and speaking to these brands, because I don't just want to do a Philly Fest the same over there. I've got to adapt it for an American audience, because actually the persona of a affiliate manager at a brand is different to the persona in the UK.
Yeah.
And so we need to adapt our show according to that.
Yeah, that's quite an interesting dilemma actually, because you've built an identity in a brand, I would say, that's relatively, like, given how young the company is, already pretty well established, I think, on the agenda in the industry. And there's a degree to which you don't want to deviate from that too much, because that's your core identity, but you do want to adapt to the needs
of the local market.
Exactly. How do you strike that balance?
So just being humble again and not just like having assumptions about what they want and what's worked. And I think that's what I didn't do before. but just not making assumptions that, okay, everyone loves it here because it's in a cool venue and we do like loads of pre-arranged meetings and roundtables. Like, that's not necessarily what will work over there.
Yeah.
And even just something really simple as like, we couldn't launch with a one day event over there because no one's coming. There's no like hub.
Yeah.
So to go to Nashville for one day from, you know, somewhere else in America is just wouldn't work.
Yeah.
So just like small things like that, that you have to really pay attention to, together with like big things. Like, you know, I don't think the brand to brand is as evolved over there.
Mm.
So like content is obviously got to be so different and, whereas maybe influencer is a bit more advanced.
Yeah.
So that's what we're doing all at the moment.
Before
we really launch.
Yeah. You've spoken about one of those kind of losses, I guess, like, you know, Summit Europe.
Mm.
Has there ever been like an instance where you've had something that looked like it was a loss to begin with, but has then later on you've been like, actually, do you know what? That was actually quite successful and it was kind of unexpected. That could be like if conferences in general, it could be individual sort of session formats or, you know.
Yeah, I mean, with that debate we did in Manchester, we lost money on that.
Okay.
And we were a bit like, did that work? Was that good? And actually, it was amazing. Like, we were a bit like, this is so different what we usually do. We lost money, but actually the response and like we've really managed to tap into more of a younger audience because of it, I think, and the social coverage that we got afterwards was insane. So I mean, I was really stressed because I really just at least wanted to break even, and we lost money, but I think it's been a bit of a it's been good in terms of like the halo, the brand halo around
And what about the reverse of that? Things that you always assumed, you know, this is a great idea, this is definitely going to work, and for whatever reason, it just hasn't quite landed in the way that you would have expected.
Mm. Yeah.
Or was it the same? Was it the same answer?
Networking on the big wheel last year.
Yeah.
It's like people just wanting to go on it for fun. I'm like trying to use it for like, force them to network and stuff. And they're like, no, we just want to come and go. And this is on some stuff like that. I maybe like, we need to like not overcomplicate things sometimes.
People
find their own way.
What is it that you would say that you know now as like, you know, 2 years in, you know, I guess you're already a kind of like a leader within Clarion given the seniority of your roles there, but actually going out on your own and being that person that is ultimately fundamentally responsible to the staff, etc. What's something that you really wish that you'd understood earlier in your career, maybe, that would have helped you maybe get to where you are now quicker, or I don't know?
That connected to a lot of the stuff we've been talking about at this event is like those people that you think have all the answers to everything, they actually don't. You look at like people on boards or like senior people and actually they're like as vulnerable as you and they make mistakes and they don't know everything and... Yeah. And so, like, don't be intimidated by those people because no one has all the answers at all.
Yeah.
And actually, vulnerability is the best quality to have as a leader.
Mm.
And, I think there could be a bit more of that.
Yeah, yeah. Is there something that you would go back, you know, jumping into a time machine, traveling back to speak to yourself as, like, a early 20s kind of young professional?
Yeah.
Is there something that you would say to that person?
Oh, yeah. I'd be like... stop tying your self-worth to this fucking corporate job.
Okay.
Like, because it's like, everything was all like, when it's going well, it's going well. And when it's not, you know, I would feel like not great. And, and actually it's just, I was so frustrated working for someone else and being tied to someone else's values. Like, go and just do it yourself. Like, I really didn't grow up being like, I want to run my own business, but I'm just an absolute dream to be doing that now. Yeah. And I'm so much cooler to my stepkids. Like, because entrepreneurs are cool these days.
Yeah.
And they're like, they like really dismiss their dad and like love that I'm an entrepreneur.
I wanted to kind of like round things off by focusing on some of the kind of like the winnings and what does winning actually mean to you today? What does success look like?
Oh, I love that question because like right now this is what winning is like today. Like it's not necessarily the revenue or the growth, although that's been really amazing year on year, but it's just like a happy bunch of customers who are like giving me this amazing feedback and building it with a team that I love working with. That's winning. And like getting up and like literally I love going to work. Like I love it. I love going in, and we all go in the office one day a week and I like love it. I like skip over London Bridge because I'm so happy. So that's what winning is to me.
Winning is you with a glass of wine and a pair of roller skates on.
Yes, that is gonna be me.
You've had like a real change in gears, I guess, around your career. Do you think your definition of success has changed over that time? Okay, last question for me is like, just what does that success or what does winning look like, you know, 3 years out from now? Like, you've started the company, where does it go from here?
Well, yeah, I'd like to be like double in size here, I think. Really successful US launch. Manchester, love that event. It's like such an amazing community up there. And then maybe another country as well. So we've talked about Australia, but, you know, nothing's really off the cards in terms of where we can take a Philly Fest, I think.
Global domination.
Yes, definitely.
That's all for this episode of Lessons from Losing. Next time, I'll be joined by Kieran Dunn, CEO and co-founder of Genie Ventures, as he reflects on more than two decades of building businesses, the lessons that shaped him as an entrepreneur, and why some of the biggest opportunities come from taking calculated risks. If you've enjoyed listening, make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss the rest of the series. And if you'd like to watch the full video interviews, just head over to Awin's YouTube channel. Until next time, thanks for listening and join me again for another Lesson from Losing.